Jason.
Just say a few other words.
I don't see that.
I am Carol Steiger of the Mill Valley Historical Society. Today is June the 12th, 2003, and I am at the home of Betsy and Bob Andreessen at Villa Marin, a lovely retirement complex high in the hills overlooking the Northgate Shopping Center in San Rafael, California. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning.
What is your full name?
Betsy Ann Brown Andreessen.
Before we get into Mill Valley matters, let's talk a few minutes about your parents and grandparents, where they were born and grew up and that sort of thing. So you talk about them.
Well, my mother was Gertrude MacDonald Brown. MacDonald spelled with a little D. She was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. Her father was Edward MacDonald, spelled with a little D. Was born in England, came over to Canada, and then came down to Minnesota, where my mother was born, and eventually came out to Seattle with his many daughters in about the late 1890s. My father was I.W.W. Brown. That means Isaac Williams White Brown. He was born in San Francisco in 1873. His father was I.W.W. Brown, the first. He was born in Marietta.
Marietta where?
Marietta, Ohio.
Okay.
He came over from Marietta, Ohio in 1850 with his father and two brothers. They came over the Isthmus of Nicaragua to the Gold Rush.
Now, what age was he at that time?
He was about 20.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, his brothers were twin brothers, and they were about 21 or 22. My grandfather, I.W.W. Brown, stayed in California, in San Francisco, and was a grocer, and he married Bessie Howland. And Bessie Howland was from New Bedford, Massachusetts. Her parents came around the horn with their little baby to make a name for themselves and to seek their fortune in San Francisco.
What year would that have been?
That was about 1860, so
okay.
Not sure.
So during the Civil War days?
Yes. This young man was a carpenter, and he thought he had something to offer in California, which he did.
Now, but you were not born in California. Where were you born?
No, I was born in Seattle.
But tell us how your family got from San Francisco to Seattle.
Well, my mother, as I said before, was brought to Seattle by her father. And she was living up there.
But she was born in San Francisco.
My mother was born in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And that was in 1885.
Okay.
She was Gertrude MacDonald. She was the oldest of nine children. Her mother died when she was 18, and so she was not going to get married and have a big family. That was her. So she became a career woman, and she worked for a food broker in Seattle, and she was a very successful career woman. With friends, she took a trip in 1915 to the San Francisco Fair and to the San Diego Fair. It was celebrating the opening of the Panama Pacific of the Panama Canal. She then attended the fair, and as part of the side trip on this tour, she went up to Mount Tamalpais on the crookedest railroad in the world, and then down in the gravity car. And I have little pictures that I could show you.
Okay.
My father was I.W.W. Brown, Jr., and his vocation was in maritime shipping. He became a purser on the coastal ships, schooners they called them. He went up to Alaska and down to Mexico, and had made a career of that. In 1915, he was a purser on the ship from San Francisco to San Diego from Seattle, and he met Gertrude MacDonald, who was introduced to him by a friend who said, "Take care of Miss MacDonald." After a brief courtship, they were married on March 7th, 1916. and Betsy Ann Brown, called Betty, was born on January 27, 1917 in Seattle, Washington. After several months, Betsy and Gertrude MacDonald Brown sailed to San Francisco, California. Story of a baby buggy nearly going off the deck due to the swells and waves while entering the Golden Gate was part of our family history. They lived in a hotel on Bush Street and then in a cottage in Oakland. Gertrude's sisters, Ruth Frickland and husband Art, and son Dick lived there. Later, Will Brown, IWW, and family moved to Glendale, California, and son Robert Wesley Brown was born on August 10, 1918. The family moved to San Francisco, then the family moved about 1920. The family moved back to San Francisco and bought a little arts and crafts house out in the Parkside district of San Francisco.
Do you know the address of that?
Yes, the address is 2467 31st Avenue. It was a small cottage, a cute little shingled cottage, and it was the only house on the block at the time.
Is it still there?
The house is still there, but it has been remodeled to look like all the other houses on the street.
Too bad.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
In 1917, the Twin Peaks Tunnel had been built, and that was what caused the development out in the Parkside. The house was located on 31st Avenue between Terraville and Yoloa Street. I.W.W. Brown's sister, Alice Purdy, lived under the hill because the streets didn't go through. There were large sand dunes, and her place had been established in right after the earthquake, and there were a number of little settlements down under the hill, as my mother used to say.
I don't understand what you mean by under the hill.
Well, under the hill was there was a hill of sand.
What are you relating to, the
31st
tunnel or out further?
No, I'm relating to 31st Avenue.
Okay.
And the streets had all been laid out. Some of the streets weren't paved as yet, and they weren't cut through, but there was a big hill where we lived. We lived on the top of the hill, and then down beyond Yoloa, the hill went down.
Oh, I see. That's what's under the hill. I thought you meant under.
And so my mother called it under the hill.
I see. That was kind of misleading at first.
Yeah.
Well, that's so, yes.
And we lived in Parkside until 1924, when we moved to Lansdale, Marin County.
Oh, yes.
In 1924, we moved to Marin County. Brother Bob was prone to asthmatic attacks because of the foggy weather. We moved in the fall to a rented cottage in Lansdale at 13 Oak Knoll Avenue. It was a summer cottage, and so we could live in it through the winter. It was pretty cold over there. Our neighbors were Roy Smith and his family, the grandpa, and Shirley and two sons, and a Scottish family on San Anselmo Avenue, who were very dear to the two little new neighbors. Later in the summer, we moved up to the hill above Lansdale at 55 Forest Avenue. Mother's friends were Mrs. Murgatroyd, who's famous in Marin County, the past, and the Mordecai, and others whom I can't recall. Then,
how old were you at this time?
I was about seven.
So you were in school?
I went to the Yolansdale School. That was between Lansdale and Lansdale and Yolanda. So they called it Yolanda School.
Is that still there?
No, the school has been torn down. Betty Presley, who was in the Department of Health in the county of Marin County, was one of my classmates. She since passed away. And when we went to the city, San Francisco, the city was capital letters.
Yes.
We took the electric train at the Lansdale Station to Sausalito and took the ferry to San Francisco. My favorite stop was at Mill Valley at the Cal Pius High School. I longed to be a big kid going to TAM. And later on in the 60s or 70s, my children, Eric and Meg, were students there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Many ships, sailing ships, were anchored in Richardson Bay. I was led to believe they were left over from the gold rush in the 1850s. Later I heard that they were part of the Alaska fishing fleet. We returned to San Francisco in 1927 to the fall. My father had changed his position and couldn't live in Marin anymore. But we did return to Marin in the summers.
So in 1927, what school did you go to in San Francisco?
I went to Parkside School.
No, where's that?
Parkside's on 24th Avenue between Yoloa and Vincente.
Mm-hmm. Is it still there?
At Parkside School building, it's still there as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It is used for administration purposes. It was a very new school at the time, having a small shop, a cooking classes, sewing classes. It was from 1 to 8, and then the next year, I was the first class that entered, and the first 1 to 8 class that graduated, and then the next year, they opened a kindergarten, and my brother was in the first kindergarten, and then he graduated from Parkside. We went to the little community church there at 24th or 23rd Avenue on Yoloa, and they were very kind people who were welcoming two little kids from the neighborhood. I think they were Seventh-day Adventists.
You mean this community church was Seventh-day Adventist?
Yes, I think it was. Something I really don't know, but I learned all my Bible studies, Bible stories from that school. Then in 1934, I graduated from Polytechnic High School.
Now where's that?
Polytechnic High School is in the Haight-Ashbury district nearby Kezar Stadium.
And the Polytechnic, is that still there?
Polytechnic has been torn down.
Torn down.
That
sounds like your life.
And it's now a senior citizen complex.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it was near Kezar Stadium and Golden Gate Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so close to the games all the time and could run in the park. Then in 1939, I graduated from San Francisco State College.
Now that is not where it is now, so tell us where it was.
San Francisco State was at Haight and Buchanan, I think, near Market Street. It's right adjacent.
Now what is there now?
It's right adjacent to the Mint.
Yeah, near the Mint. But what's on those grounds now?
I think it's an extension college.
Yeah, that's what I think so too.
But I'm not sure.
That's right. Okay, so you never got out to the new campus. I mean, that was long afterwards.
No, later on we went out to the new campus and went to many theater productions on the campus and to reunions and all. And of course, from 1930 to 1941 was what became the Great Depression, and those were hard times.
Okay, now tell us about your meeting Bob. Oh, first of all, to get back to your college, what was your degree in?
Oh, my degree was general elementary teaching credential with an AB degree.
Uh-huh.
Oh, during high school, maybe I should get back to that. What do you want me to do?
Anything.
Well, during high school, I went hiking with Mr. Smith, who was a teacher at Poly High, of natural science. and we went in groups to Muir Woods and Big Lagoon in West Marin. We would meet at the ferry building by the florist shop and take the ferry and the electric train to Mill Valley. The cars were packed with hikers. Regina Breimer was one in the group too. Regina lives in Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We walked up Throckmorton Street to the old mill and up the stairs to the top of the hill along the pipeline.
What year are you talking about now?
I'm talking about 1932,
33,
34.
Okay.
Sometimes we went up to Mountain Home Inn and reached up there by more stairs and trails. Many of the trails are still there, but I can't identify them anymore. Sometimes we dropped down another way and we got to Muir Woods and Big Lagoon. And on the way we could stop at a cafe. There was Jack's and Joe's and...
You talk about in Mill Valley?
No, those were up on the hiking trail.
Oh, I see. What would say them again?
They were Jack's or
what,
Joe's.
What was Jack's?
Jack's was a little cafe where people stopped and bought coffee and hot dogs. And
Joe's, you're saying?
And Joe's. They were there.
I don't remember them.
Vaguely remember them. But there was always a group of rollicking hikers there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
On the street from the depot up Throckmorton, there were lots of little kiosks that offered food and drink. Little shacks built with boards and sort of improvised, and they sold hot dogs and popcorn and all on the way up. And there were little tree houses up in the redwoods. Some of the redwoods are still there. My friend, a girlfriend at high school, who I met in 1931, and I used to hike.
What's
up,
her name?
Her name is Aubra Simpson, and her name is an odd spelling, A-U-B-R-A, Simpson, S-E-M-S-E-N. Her grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Reimer, spelled R-E-I-M-E-R, were residents of Mill Valley. Mr. Reimer was a barber, and I'm told his shop was about where McDonald's Jewelry is located. I would come over and visit Aubra, who was staying with her grandparents, for the summer. What a happy time it was for me out of the fog. And we two little young girls would go hiking through the paths, the trails, without a worry.
Yeah, things were nicer in those days.
The hills were covered with wildflowers and squirrels and all sorts of little animals. And we could identify many of the flowers. Of course, having experience with Mr. Smith, going before it was quite, we were enlightened.
Was there anything romantic between him and the girls?
Oh, no. No, he brought his own family.
I see, okay.
And his daughters. And mm-hmm. Although his daughter had her boyfriend, and we used to snicker at the antics of the boyfriend and the daughter. The daughter and her la-di-da, we called him. In 1937, I met Bob Andreessen, Robert Henry Andreessen, who was a law student at Hastings College of the Law, which was down on Van Ness Avenue near the Civic Center. And he would come to visit me. It was at times they thought he was a student at San Francisco State because he was there so often. So as a date, we'd go hiking in Marin, which we both loved. We both knew Marin from our past youthful experiences, his having been a Boy Scout. And so we enjoyed renewing and enlarging our knowledge of Marin and outside world. Also, it was a great place to be alone together. Virginia Stolte, a transfer from Marin Junior College, entered San Francisco State in about 19, 1933, and we became good friends. Virginia was about 5 foot 8 or 9, and I was 5 feet tall, but we were still good friends, and we had lots of good fun together at state. We became very good friends later on when we came over to live in Marin. She lived in Homestead Valley at the end of Montford. The present site is the Stolte Grove. She bought Daphne flowers, Daphne blossoms, from the sweet-smelling bushes to us, for us to wear and enjoy. I had never smelled Daphne before and was really intrigued. After a while, small groups would be invited to Mill Valley, to Virginia's, for picnicking and swimming in the Homestead Creek. It was very cold.
I bet. Tell us about how you met Bob.
Well, Bob and I had mutual friends, B. Zisser, and B is Beatrice, or B-E-A, Z-I-S-S-E-R,
mm-hmm.
And B. Zisser was a musician, and she used to come in with her family to the mountain plays. In fact, they participated in the mountain plays. That's just an aside. But Bee was Bob's neighbor girlfriend, and she went to San Francisco State. And she told Bob wanted a date to go to the St. Francis Hotel for a New Year's party. Bob at that time was going to San Mateo Junior College, where Bee went too. So he wanted a date to go to a New Year's Eve party with lobster and steak. And Dee said, well, I have a good friend, a cute little redhead that you would be just great for you. But he called me and I said, well, my mother won't let me go because I haven't met you. Imagine, I was 19 at the time. But anyway, so I said I wouldn't be able to go, and that I'd be happy to meet him sometime. So on January 7th, he came and met me, and we haven't been separated for 65 years.
Well, you know, Bob was interested in talking about how you met, but he never mentioned anything about the wedding itself. So tell about the wedding.
My wedding,
where was it held?
Well, my wedding was held at the St. Immediate Church in
the St. what?
St. Immediate.
How do you spell
well,
that?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, all right.
St. Immediate is the patron saint, Catholic Church.
Okay.
The saint, he's the patron saint of earthquakes, I understand.
Okay.
But anyway, it's E-U.
All right. You don't have to go on.
Immediate. It has a Y.
And that's in San Francisco?
That's in San Francisco.
In what area? On what street?
Well, it's near Ocean Avenue.
Okay.
It's off Ocean Avenue. I don't know the name. I've forgotten.
Okay. So
anyway, we both graduated from I graduated from San Francisco State in 1939, and Bob graduated from Hastings in 1939, and I went to teach school down in Lindsay.
In Tulare County. I looked at when you mentioned that, and I thought, so how did you happen to go way down there?
Well, that's where there was a job.
Okay, well, okay. And what grade did you teach?
And I taught the fifth grade.
Fifth grade. For a full year or
no,
longer?
No, I taught it for a half a year.
One half a year.
Uh-huh.
Well, because I saw that in your notes, and I thought, that's a strange place to go way down there.
Well, jobs were hard to find.
We applied,
and that was the job.
That was before you got married.
That was before I got
married. Then you got married.
No, well, first of all, before we got married, I taught school, and then Bob studied for the bar.
Yeah.
And he passed the bar in December.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided we would get married in February.
Okay.
So then I...
This would be February of what?
February of 1940.
40, yeah, okay.
And we got married. And we lived in an apartment on on the Great Highway in San Francisco at 2400. And it was a big apartment. It's still there.
Okay, we're going.
The building is still there, and it's it was. They said it was brought over from the fair.
Oh, which fair? The
1915 fair. Yeah. And it's still there. It was a fun place to live for a young couple. And one morning or afternoon, we went out and Tate's at the Beach was on fire. And we saw
what was on fire.
Tate's at the Beach.
And what was Tate's?
Tate's was an old
roadhouse.
A restaurant. Mm-hmm. That was up on the overlooking the bit of the ocean.
By the cliff house.
No, it was down by where the Fleischacker pool is.
Oh, down in that neck of the woods. Okay.
Close to Fleischacker, not there in that area. Of course, for fun, we'd go walking up and down, walking on the beach and down to Fleischacker Zoo, and I think it didn't cost anything to get into Fleischacker Zoo at that time.
Okay, so you got married, and then you lived there for a while, and then how did you ever get to Mill Valley, Marin County?
Well, then we moved to, we wanted a better place. That was really raunchy. Then we moved to the Richmond District on 36th Avenue and Fulton, near the park. We're always living in unusual places, near parks or beaches and all. Then in 19, after that, we bought a house in Parkside on 2444 44th Avenue.
Oh, my.
It was right. It was built by a contractor, Mr. Costello, and we paid $5,500. And Mr. Costello was a relative of one of our Villa Marin residents.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Barbara Costello.
Okay, and then I know pretty soon the war comes along.
Then the war came.
Yeah.
And Bob decided he must enlist. He was not drafted, but he enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
Because he thought it was very important. We had no children, and we went. So then I went back to teaching. I did substitute teaching in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I went all over the city teaching. I went to Chinatown, I went to North Beach, I went to way out in Butchertown, out to Parkside.
Now when you say Butchertown, lots of people don't know what you mean by Butchertown.
Butchertown.
Is that Hunter's Point area now?
Hunter's Point, yes.
Yeah, but I mean it was called Butcherstown then.
Well, I'm not sure, but it was way out.
Well, I mean, that,
and I went way
it's
out.
Just a word that I'm not familiar with, Butcherstown.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Okay, so.
But I went to the mission, and I had lots of fun with the children because I was young, and they all enjoyed it. I liked that.
Okay.
And I didn't have to make lesson plans.
And then Bob told how he was stationed at the Presidio, and pretty soon he was moved up to Seattle or somewhere. So
yes, Bob was in military intelligence, the provost marshal, department of intelligence, and he moved up to Seattle. And we lived in Seattle all through the war, 3 years.
Okay, and then after the war?
Well, we lived in Seattle. We lived on Beach Drive in West Seattle.
What?
Beach Drive.
Mm-hmm.
173 Beach Drive.
Mm-hmm.
That's another beautiful location.
Yeah, okay.
And we had a sailboat, and all the time we were there, Bob was in civilian clothes, which was unusual.
Yeah. Then the war ended, and you came back.
Then the war ended, and in the meantime, we had sold our house. San Francisco. And we put our money in the bank and decided we would build a house when we would go to Marin when we came back. So we looked for lots. We went to Lansdale, which I knew, and then we looked through lots at La Ross, and we were always coming back to Mill Valley. And we decided, well, Mill Valley is the place. Mill Valley beckons us. So we started looking more seriously in Mill Valley. And Will Sally was one of our real estate people.
What's the name?
Will Sally.
I thought you said Mill Valley.
No, Will.
Will?
Will Sally. F-A-L-L-E-Y.
Okay.
And he was they could used to call him Will Valley. Will Valley is Mill Valley.
It sounds great. It rhymes. Both of them rhyme.
And so. He was quite a character. Everybody knew Will Valley.
And he was the real estate that sold you the lot.
He didn't sell us a lot, but he was, and Jack McCallum and his wife, Thea McCallum. T-H-E-A. Thea McCallum.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived up on the road to Camel Pires up in the High Mountains. High Hills, and others, and I can't recall, but the real estate was Mill Valley's business.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked and we couldn't find what we wanted, but we were introduced to a man called Monty Monet, M-O-N-T-E-Y, Monet, M-O-T-E-E-T, M-O-N-E-T, like a Monet, M-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a piece of property. He and his wife, Jane, were speculators, and they would buy a lot and build a house and sell it. And Monty's slogan was, get a lot on a hill and slice it off as flat as a pancake and build a house, which became outlawed later on.
Yeah.
But anyway, he had this property up at on McGee, and he had a large piece of property and a good sized spot next to it. So he offered us a 60-foot parcel of his lot running along McGee. It was a large lot as far as we were concerned, because we had lived in San Francisco where there were 25-foot lots.
Yeah.
And so 60 feet, but in Mill Valley, we needed more. But the lot went all the way down to Corte Madera Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So we started building a house. We engaged a draftsman to draw up the plans. He lived on La Goma, and I can't remember his name. And then we were engaged Archie Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, and his crew to build the house on time and material plan. And we paid at the end of each week for his services.
Mm-hmm.
I was the one who did all the procuring for the materials. Materials were very, very hard to get. And I went all over and bought nails by the pound. We were able to get lumber from the Hess Lumber Company, H-E-S-S Lumber Company, and in San Rafael, and sometimes from the Mill Valley Lumber Company. And the work started and the foundation was dug, and we have pictures showing, in fact I have a book here that I made a scrapbook of the proceedings. John Barleycorn got the better of the work crew, and we had to engage another set of workers. Mr. Walker and his partner proved to be very successful for us. Bob was commuting to the city, commuting on the Greyhound bus. He was working for the mortgage zone as an assistant resident attorney for Prudential Insurance Company. While we were building, we were living in a share of the house arrangement with Ralph and I can't remember their name. Ralph's house, Ralph was an old Marin County resident. His home was on Miller Avenue, right above the paint shop. I just can't remember his last name. Soon the house became livable. The roof was on and the interior nearly finished, and so we moved in.
So what year would that have been?
That was about 1946.
Mm-hmm.
46, 47. I should have gotten these dates, but
that's all right. It's approximately.
And then we moved in on some cold October day with little or no furniture. We did have heat, but we still didn't have walls. We did much of the sheetrock work and all of the painting, and we filled in all the nails in the living room's knotty pine wall.
So that was your house.
That was our house.
Okay. Then you later moved to 89 Walnut. Am I skipping around too much?
Yeah, I am here. Virginia, can you hold it for a moment?
Okay. Okay, now what do you want to say?
Our neighbors on McGee were, our house on McGee was 181 McGee. And at 185, Elsie Ng, whose home, as well as her brothers and sisters, who lived at 190, was burned in the 1929 fire. This whole area where we lived had been burned. The houses had been burned.
So you had a fresh area there.
So we had a fresh area.
The trees weren't too big then.
The trees that were there were acacia trees. They had been planted to make a quick growth. And believe me, they were quick.
Yeah,
they were just a menace.
Oh, menace, okay. Yeah, I know they're,
okay. Vern and Lou Whitney lived across the street. Lou and Vern had bought the house of the Smith house. The Smiths had lived in Mill Valley with Aunt Elsie Ng since the fire. They had come over after the fire and earthquake to build in Mill Valley.
When you say the fire, you mean the Mill Valley the 1906 fire?
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. It was a 1906 fire.
Okay, yeah, okay.
So they were very old Marin, Mill Valley residents. And the Smith built the house at 190 above the McGee, and the Ings built, Elsie Ng and her mother built the house below. She was a little maiden lady. Cute as a little bug. Fern and Lou Whitney lived in the house above, and now Dick Spotwoods lives in that house.
Oh, okay.
So it was a sort of an English-style house. Now, and then, in the meantime, Margaret and X. Larrabee lived in that house. And their children, Sarah and Meg, and I don't know, they had eventually had about six children. They went back to Durham, North Carolina, but X had worked for the Chronicle, and they had many happy parties up there with Paul Smith, the editor of the Chronicle, and other Chronicle reporters, and we were often included. Guy and Martha Pease lived at the turn of the road.
How do you spell Pease?
P-E-A-S-E.
Mm-hmm.
And they built Guy and Martha built the home by themselves. And there's a steep concrete drive that goes all the way up to their house on the side of the hill. And he and Martha mixed all the cement in their hand-turned mixer. And then the Pearl Hildebrand lived a little further up.
I knew her.
And she was a teacher in Mill Valley. She was lived there for a bit. And then around the turn on the other side, coming up from Puerto Madera Avenue, was a large Victorian house. And I can't remember the people who owned that house. But eventually, Onslow Ford, the artist, lived in that place.
How do you spell Onslow?
A-O-N-S...
Let me say that again.
A-O-N-S-L-O-W hyphen Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched his career. He recently passed away. I think he lived over in Inverness or someplace. Below on Corte Madera lived Lee and Blanche Parker, and they had bought the house from a Mrs. Cole, C-O-L-E. It was a very rustic building that had been added sun porches all the time with screened-in porches. It was sort of jerry-built, but it was arty. Mrs. Cole was very artistic and a so-called intellectual. She had, according to Elsie Ng, she had gave tea parties, and people would come and talk intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
She served no food, just tea and talk. She had a Japanese houseboy, and she had a beautiful, and a gardener, and beautiful hydrangeas and chrysanthemums, among other things. And later that house was bought by Itzy Orlando, O-R-L, Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And Orlando is a speculator in Mill Valley. He buys and sells houses. I don't know whether he's still living or not. But ironically, this Mrs. Cole was a friend of one of our relatives. So we had some tie in with that. Okay. Then son Eric arrived in 1952. Eric Peter. Is this all we want?
You want to tell anything more how he arrived or anything?
And Prudential wanted to send Bob to Seattle, and we didn't want to leave California. He was employed by another real estate construction company in on the peninsula, on the Adstad, who wanted to come over to Marin County and build thousands of houses, but was rebuffed. And we contemplated moving to Palo Alto. After a year, he left Odstad, and decided to open his law practice in Mill Valley. That was 1952. He sold the house at 181 McGee.
Okay.
The house was bought by the Frankfurters.
The one that was on the McGee.
On the house of the McGee, the Frankfurter. And they lived there for, well, maybe 50, 20 years. And eventually the house was built, later bought by the Garagases, who was a sculptor. Garagas. They moved over to Stinson Beach. It had been remodeled and redesigned by Carvey Kleiss's company, and has sold for over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
We rented a lovely cottage at 89 Walnut from George and Myrtle Watson. It had a beautiful garden backing on Catalpa. with the birch trees in the front on Walnut and birch trees in the back and the rear along the creek side. The rhododendrons, azaleas, camellias, pears, apples, apricot trees. The garage was on Catalpa. It had been remodeled by Watson, who raised the roof and brought in three little bedrooms to the on the top floor. And then we remodeled it and loved it.
How could you remodel it when you were renting it?
Oh, well, then we bought the house.
Oh, I see, you bought it.
We eventually, though, here, I forgot that. Yeah. We eventually bought the house because we liked the location.
Uh-huh.
Having lived in the hills, which people considered the Mill Valley, we discovered that the south, the lower land was just as nice to live in. And it was close to the schools, and the children didn't have to be driven to school. So then in 1954, our daughter Margaretta Rose, and I spell it M-A-R-G-R-E-T-E, Rose, and we call her Meg, arrived. Our neighbors were Paul and Ruth Brent.
Oh, yes, I remember them.
Their son Steve and daughter Susan. Susan is now living in Guatemala. With a successful family. And Jack and Mary Clausen were neighbors across the street.
How do you spell Clausen?
C-L-A-U-S-E-N. They had a beautiful garden. And then we lived on Walnut for a while, the house on Catalpa was for sale. It was owned by Thomas McWaters. The McWaters had lived in Mill Valley from the beginning. Originally, they lived on Miller, and then they bought a house. They built a house on Catalpa. Mr. McWaters and Mr. Weissick, Bill Weissick's father, built two houses at the corner of Walnut and Fern. Mr. McWaters had 89 Walnut Weissick's lived next door. Eventually the Weissick's moved and the house was bought by the Losis.
How do you spell Losis?
L-O-C-E-Y.
Okay.
The Losis were refugees from Hawaii after Pearl Harbor. They came over and bought a house up in the canyon, Cascade Canyon, up above Lovell, big house up there, still there. And lived for a while, and then they moved down to Catalpa. Mrs. McWaters became widowed. Mr. McWaters' wife died, and so Mrs. Lucy and Mr. McWaters married.
Okay.
And we bought their house. They moved to Strawberry, and we bought their house. And we lived in this house for about...
What year do you remember what year that was?
That was in 1950.
How old was Meg at the time?
Meg was two.
So that had been about 56.
Yeah, about 56.
Okay,
yeah.
That's close enough. Mm-hmm.
And Meg entered Tamalpais Nursery School.
Where was that?
And Tamalpais Nursery School was in the Baptist Church on Miller Avenue.
I know that's because that's where my son went.
Yeah. And I was one of the founding board members. Beverly Bastion.
I remember her. She was the bigwig.
Yes, she was. And then Eric had gone, and then Meg went there. And then I became very active in the Park School PTA, Tamalpais Nursery School, and the Children's Home Society, and became president of the Auxiliary of Peter Pan, and then Sunny Hills Group, and AAW, the Mill Valley branch, and Triple C.
Well, explain what Triple C is, because I know what it is.
Triple C is the community church group.
The Women's Auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Community Church
Club.
Yeah, okay. And then I belong to Lawyers Wives.
Oh, I remember that. I don't think that's in the
group. No, that's gone.
Back in those days, Lawyers Wives, it's quite different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember that.
Yeah, and we had parties and dances and,
yes,
and fundraisers, and we did docets at the courthouse. And we also joined the Mill Valley Tennis Club. And I became the first women's chairman in charge of social activities. I took piano lessons from John Ludlow up in his little house up on the steps out off of Cascade. And I became treasurer of the Northbridge Open Space Program.
Well, that was later though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was later.
Yeah, I remember. That was more recent.
And Bob joined Rotary International, and I became a Rotary Ann, and we went.
What do you call it?
The Rotary Ann.
A-N-M.
A-N-M, yeah.
Okay.
Rotary Ann.
Is it two words?
Well, I think it sort of goes on.
Okay,
I don't know.
All over.
But
okay.
Anyway, they don't have Rotary Ann.
No, because they have women members now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a fun time. And I was, later, volunteered in the schools, and I didn't want to be a volunteer in the classroom because I had been a teacher and I didn't want to cloud anybody's program. So,
okay, now let's see. Let's talk for a minute. Now, you're a 50-year member of the Outdoor Art Club,
mm-hmm,
and a past president. What can you tell about the club that's changed between when you joined in the 50s and today? Can you remember some of the changes?
Well,
you dress differently, for one
thing.
Well,
yeah, we don't wear gloves, that's right. We
and
wear
hats
gloves
and
hats, and we always dress
high heels.
And well, just in the style.
Yeah.
We always were dressed well.
Yeah.
At one time, we had teas almost every. Well, we had every. We met every other twice a month, on the first and the third Thursday, and in between we had other things going, like bridge parties or well baby clinics and other things. But we met on the first and the third with the program. Well, it got so that people weren't coming to the programs because they didn't. So we decided, and I was instigated in it, that maybe if we had a little sandwich, people would come for lunch and they wouldn't have to get all dressed up. They could wear what we called a house dress.
Uh-huh.
And a house dress was a nice looking cotton dress of whatever you wanted. And of course nowadays people wear slacks, but they didn't then. And so we had a sandwich, a very simple lunch, and we had our meeting at 12 o'clock and had our program, and everybody got to go home early. So eventually it got so the next person that gave it wanted a little better and a little better.
Well, I remember when I was president about 5 years or 5 or 6 years before you, and I remember when I was president was the first year that we actually had tables to have the lunch on.
Oh.
Anna Krongard was in charge of the lunch, and she,
mm-hmm,
said, let's get tables out. And said it were just card tables at first,
yeah,
before,
mm-hmm,
we got our banquet tables.
Mm-hmm.
But things have changed.
Yes,
yeah,
they have.
Well, let's see, you were president in 1977. I always say that every president has a lot of joys and also always had some problems. Did you have any problem? Like, I had the hippies. When I was president, I had the hippies living in the basement. What did you have? Anything?
Well, we finished the painted the kitchen,
uh-huh,
and papered it. I don't know. It all sort of blends in.
Sure.
I don't,
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to do was be sure that the stone wall was finished. in the back in the wedding garden. Scotty was a tremendous help in keeping the garden in order.
Mm-hmm.
We had to do their own watering. Oh, we had the committee that watered the garden.
No automatic.
And we had to water. Thank you, Carol. That's right. I got the water, whether I did it as president or on the garden committee. We had the sprinkling system, which I understand has been redone, which is good. So those are a lot of things. And that now the bushes are all grown up, so we're encased in shrubs, and we don't see the movie theater anymore when we go to weddings.
Well, let's see now. Anything else you want to say about the Outdoor Art Club? Or before I go on to something else?
I love the Outdoor Art Club.
What?
I love the Outdoor Art Club and all the people who are friendly, wonderful, and I can find that we had very little cantankerous incidents.
That's good. I agree, too.
And as long as through all my life, I've never seen a group of women that could work so.
Oh, I think I'm pleased that you're saying that, because I think it's great, too.
Sometimes we have somebody who comes in and wants to blow us apart.
Well, okay, I want to tell you one thing. This is just sort of, when I was just a few years back, I was in charge of the archives, and prior to that, we had stuff in the back of the stage and in the library and in the file cabinets out in the sun porch everywhere. We finally got a room downstairs, and I wanted some furniture for it, so I asked for furniture, and you folks volunteered a desk, and I went with the moving van over there. They had a terrible time taking it down the stair, your winding stairs at Catawba.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me something about the desk. You know, I always wished that desk could talk.
Well, I'm not sure about the desk. I don't know. Bob would know.
Was it in his office on?
In 1953, Bob opened his law practice.
Yes.
53. And he had bought the practice from Paul Thorne. Paul Thorne had the office, and he bought all his books and his shelves, which he eventually changed a lot of things. But I think that desk was part of it, but I'm not sure.
Well, anyway.
But we did the desk. We had it in our home on 181 Catawba. And it was a hard thing to get it up.
It was getting it down. I remember it was steps. And then, of course, when they got it to the club, they had to wheel it around and the gravel, the path or gravel, and trying to wheel something on a little wheel to stand, they really earned their money. See, I want to just change the subject of Whitney now.
Mm-hmm.
It says, your husband was very busy in community affairs, and the wife usually plays a backseat driver in those affairs, but is most valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you remember about Bob being on this? What was your role when Bob was on the city council? Do you remember any incidents or anything?
Well, I remember that sometimes the newspaper wasn't always very kind to
Well, that's
and they always tried to pick on the worst part of what a person did and they thought. And it's very hard on the family.
Yeah.
And I can see why poor Mrs. McGovern went bananas.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get all these people after you and they don't really know the whole thing that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's discouraging for people to have to face that.
Yeah.
You never knew when you got the paper, what it was going to say.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And then, do you remember anything about Bob being on the school board? He was president of that. Do you remember anything of interesting items about his being on the school board?
School board. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he was on the school board, and they started Ed McGuire, and then the school up on the hill, the one that's now the French school, I think, up on the hill above Homestead.
Oh, yes.
Marin
Terrace.
Marin Terrace, that just didn't go.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, now he was also on the Rotary Club. You said you were Rotary Ann. They had a lot of parties and things. They included the women, huh?
Yep. We Yes, we did. We went on conventions with the Rotary Club, and they were always fun meeting Rotarians from all over the state and all over the country, too. Yeah. And having Rotary, we had a Rotary exchange student stayed with us. Roberto Schroeder.
From what country?
Roberto was from Mexico, from Mexico City. Mm-hmm. His father was Gustavo. And he was a Rotarian, and so we arranged this through individual private lanes. They had no system, Rotary at that time, for exchange. So we found a Rotarian down in Bob wrote letters, and Gustavo came to live with us, and our daughter Meg went down to live with the...
Now, how long was that a period of?
Meg was down there for about a month, and Gustavo was with us for about 3 weeks. Roberto.
It wasn't a full semester or anything.
No, it was just, like a visitor.
Yeah, right.
And it was sort of difficult because Berto, our children were gone. Eric was at camp, and Meg was someplace else, and so we were alone with Berto, so we had to entertain him. Took him to the tennis club and different places and hiking. And he couldn't get over the fact that we had a hummingbird feeder and that we didn't shoot the birds.
Yeah.
And then his father called him on the telephone, and he was talking to him in English. And his father said, "Berto, do you realize you've been speaking in English all this time?" Because his father spoke English. He had been educated in America. So anyway, it was. And then years later, maybe 10, 15 years later, the doorbell rang, and here was this handsome young man, Latino man, a Latin man, standing at the door, and he said, "You don't remember me, but I'm Berto." And he said, "I have my wife and family to come down. I want them to meet you." So they came in, and here was this beautiful young woman with this little darling little baby with earrings. And she said, "Berto talks about you all the time."
What business had he gotten into?
He lived partly in Mexico and partly in San Diego. We never contacted him.
Yeah.
But he said, "See the hardwood floors?" He kept on.
It's funny what a different culture would stand.
And then we had a boy from Mazatlan come, and a boy from Puerto Rico.
Huh?
That was through the AFS. They didn't stay with us long.
We had Colin for a whole year.
We couldn't do that.
Well, okay, now to get onto the tennis club, that played a pretty important role in your life. I remember Bob played a lot of tennis, and you play tennis too, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was president of it, and he said
I was chairman of
the women's. Yeah, right.
And then I was active in... always active until, new people came in and I was busy doing other things.
Okay, now...
I never was a good tennis player, but I was always a willing one.
Well, I guess it made a nice social life. Okay, now what do you remember about Bob being on the Family Service Agency?
Well, the Family Service Agent started out to be a Traveler's Aid Society, which was in Marin City, and it was to help people as they came out during the war and they didn't know where to go.
I see.
And Mrs. Larson was in charge.
What was her first name?
I can't remember.
That's not Adele or anything.
No. Bob would know.
Okay.
And she had a secretary, and they ran that office. And often I went, not too often, but every once in a while I went down and helped. They had a clothes bin where people donated clothes and they just put them in a bin and you could come out. Mm-hmm. So I helped. I was always active in rummage sales.
Yeah.
I also was very active in the Triple C.
Yes, okay, that's back, we're going back to the community church.
Yeah, the community church, and those were wonderful.
They had rummage sales for you, they finally gave up about 5 years ago.
They called them the Opportunity Center.
Yeah, Opportunity, yeah.
And we had lots of...
Oh, yeah, I worked on
those. Those were wonderful women, too.
Yeah.
And then
the trouble with that group is they've just gotten old, and there are a few young ones in, but they're all working and everything. They're not participating.
And then I joined the 1066, the women's club in the...
Hastings. Oh, I know that because of the number, Hastings.
Yeah.
Battle of Hastings. I always thought that was clever using that.
Yeah.
And
Jeannie Samus, whose husband was
Dean
of, she was the one that got us started, so I got started on it too. And because I knew about garage sales, that I was appointed to the first garage sale, and we had two of them over in San Francisco, and one in a real garage. Part of the garage, we took it over and had a garage sale.
You mean a garage that repaired cars, type of garage?
Okay. It was one of those big parking garages.
I see.
We had a space, and then there was a federal building. I think we had a space in there one time for a garage sale. And it was sort of fun.
Well, let's see. Now, let's get back to your children. Eric, of course, was friendly with my son, Stuart. And tell us about him now.
Eric.
Oh,
Eric was...
Growing up.
He was always...
Very fun, outgoing.
Very outgoing, always fun, had lots of friends. And the boys and girls were always coming into our house. Our neighbors said they were jealous because we always had those cute boys coming in. And as they grew up with their long, gangly legs. And the Brennan boys and... I can't... Oh, the Stuart Steiger. And who else was in that group?
Well, one was Richard Breeze, I think.
Oh, yes, Richard Breeze. I too had cubs, and Richard Breeze was in my cub group, and I have pictures of all those kids. And it's hard to remember all those things. But I had a station wagon. And I could get 10 little boys in my station wagon, and now I think I could get 3 of them.
Well, that was before the days of seat belts, when you had to have every kid buckle down. So
right.
I used to have a station wagon full of kids, and, you know, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, and then as I understand, because he's married, Donna, and he has darling twins, and how old are the twins now?
The twins are 23.
Oh, my gosh. They're ready to have their own children.
Yes.
So, okay, and then tell about Meg now. My daughter Janet knew her when they were in Job's Daughters.
Yes, Meg was very active in Job's Daughters. She was dark brown eyes and dark hair, and she was about 5'8". And went to Chico State, graduated in the general degree, an AV degree. She married and had a son, Michael Gadberg, and she remarried after her divorce from Ross Gadberg to David Stein, and she and David, with their two girls, Sarah and Rebecca, live in Minneapolis, near Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
She's very active in Jewish community service, and she's a member of Hadassah, and has converted.
Let's see now. Well, Betsy, we're getting to the end of this, and you moved to Mill Valley in 1946, which is about 55 years. What changes have you seen in Mill Valley besides the normal changes of the clothes and cars and that sort of stuff?
Well, first of all, when we came in, there used to be a steam train that would come into Mill Valley.
Yeah.
As well as the electric train. And that would wake the children up. I think it would bring lumber into the lumber company. And that used to wake, the neighbors would be upset because it would always toot its whistle about 2:30 in the afternoon and wake all the children up from their nap. Because that was the time when young couples were coming into Mill Valley after World War II and getting started. That was a time at the community church. They had a club called the Tandem, mm-hmm. and they wanted young people to get acquainted with the church and get acquainted with the community. And the Tandem's couple couldn't be more than 70 years age together.
Combined age,
yeah. Yes. And so Doris Jenkins and Bob Jenkins were members, and they had invited us to join. Bob had met Bob Jenkins on the bus, and they became very, very good friends through all the years, and Bob Jenkins has been very active in Mill Valley library and the community and the Redwoods and all. The community, the Commuters Club was another active group. It was the commuters against the Greyhound bus. The Greyhound bus was always up to something, and anyway, that was quite a thing. And we had potlucks and parties and organizations. And then the Commuters Club started in Novato, and then it became very active. And somehow or other, they got things worked out. It isn't active anymore.
No. A lot of these organizations have just fallen away. And quietly faded away.
And then Talifies High School used to have the road running right through between the gym and
the building,
the hill. And so
it had a train and a road.
Yeah. That's when I used to stop there when I was a child.
Yeah.
And then they changed that, and they built it over the
Miller Avenue extension.
Mm-hmm. And they wanted to, Bob didn't want that road in there because he thought it would bring a lot more traffic into, well, I don't know, there were lots of, like, shut that off because I don't know that. And then Miller Avenue was only a one-sided street. There mm-hmm. was just the other side where all the, it was almost, there were no sidewalks down along there. It was all just a path.
Mm-hmm.
And all along the marshes there, it was a path. And pretty soon, they started to build the Safeway. That, I don't know when that came, but the Safeway was on Blythedale, mm-hmm. East Blythedale and Sunnyside. That's where and then the Purity Market was down Banana Republic. And then eventually Purity moved down to
my corner.
Yeah, down by Lomita and in that area. And the only grocery store is the Mill Valley Market. And the Mill Valley Market was just a little hole in the wall
mm-hmm.
where the bookstore is. And it was just one little building. It was maybe 25 foot the lot there with, and they sold the most wonderful vegetables and fruits. Frank Canepa was the proprietor. He was would go over to the produce market early in the morning and only get the very best.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Frank Keene, who was the butcher there, and he only got the best. And then Frank Keene eventually, oh, then Mill Valley Market moved to where the gold,
Green Frog
was, yeah. And
tell me, what do you remember of the Green Frog?
Well, I don't remember too much because I traded at the Purity and...
because we're doing an oral history on Chris Bingham, and she worked there. I mean, she ran it or something.
Chris Bingham, yes, I do remember Chris and her husband, Wayne. And Wayne, they were a very outgoing couple.
Okay, you were talking about Chris and Wayne.
Well, Chris was always very active, and I didn't know Chris very well. She was in another little pocket of people. But she was always very friendly, and we were always very congenial.
But I'm going to talk about the Green Frog itself.
The Green Frog was a nice threat. It's the same building that it is now, except for the
addition,
which was a bar and a soda fountain,
mm-hmm.
and a creamery. And that creamery right there on the corner by the Outdoor Art Club on the creek, that was taken over by Mill Valley Market.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Mill Valley Market sign is atrocious. It's too big for that.
Okay. You mean the Today sign?
Yeah, Today sign. Yeah, they never should have allowed that.
Well, okay.
But anyway, they have sign ordinances, and somehow or other that it's inappropriate to me.
Well, let's see now. Is anything else you want to talk about, Mill Valley?
No, the Outdoor Art Club is still there, and there are many people that have been trying to get rid of it. They use that property.
What was I going to say? Okay, I understand you want to say something about teaching in Mill Valley.
Yeah, one afternoon when we were building our house on McGee, we were setting our flagstones in our patio, and a car drove up on the road, and it was Roy Laugesen. Roy Laugesen was the superintendent of Mill Valley Schools. He was a fellow San Francisco State graduate, and he was now living in Mill Valley with his wife Melanie and daughter. He wanted me to teach kindergarten at Old Mill School. I'd pretty much finished my full-time task as purchasing and procurement officer for 181, and so I was available. There was a shortage of teachers and buildings in which to teach at that time. I was assigned a classroom in the basement of the Episcopal Church on Lovell and Old Mill. We went over to the schoolyard to play for the recesses, and the Reverend, I can't remember the Reverend's name.
Hammond.
No, it wasn't Hammond.
Before him.
Before then.
Okay.
He and his wife were there, very nice, and he'd come down and talk to me. Mrs. Van Loon was the principal of Old Mill School, and she lived on Corte Madera Avenue on the level in a quaint old house. I think it's still there. And the property is I can't remember the names of the people that owned it, but they still own it, and people wanted to make a park of it, and it's at the foot of, it's on Corte Madera near Wynwood Place.
Mm-hmm.
She was a teacher part-time teacher part of the day, and the principal and another part of the day.
Hmm.
So she was a very busy person. Ann Perrier was her assistant. She taught when Mrs. Van Loon was principal. And then there was a Miss Bishop who taught there, and Mrs. Smith, and she lived up on
McKee. What was her first name?
I can't remember her first name, but her husband was a colonel. And Mrs. Smith died on the job.
Oh.
She died when I was teaching there. Leonora Wright was
how do you spell Wright?
W-R-G-H-T.
Okay, yeah.
And she was very helpful to me, and because she had lived in Mill Valley, Her, she was related to the Donhams, who were related to the Fowlers.
Yeah.
And we had Mrs. Wright and myself with our. She had another kindergarten group, and we organized a May Day celebration. Years ago, there had been May Day celebrations in Ross at the Sunny Hills. And they, because of the war and all, they just disbanded them. So we decided we would reinstate the Maypoles, which we did. And we had all our children dancing around in the Maypole. And I have a photograph of the students that I had. Then the next year, I taught the first grade.
And where was that?
That was in... in
back in the
Old Mill School.
Old Mill School,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And before that, I taught kindergarten in the addition. I taught in the basement of the Episcopal Church, but then the next year, or the next time, I taught in the addition.
Now, that was not the Episcopal Church that's there now.
It was a part of that Episcopal Church is still there.
Because they remodeled and got a whole new church.
Yeah, but they didn't get a whole new church. I don't know.
Well, anyway.
But it was in the old church.
East,
yeah.
Stocking can square.
Yeah, I don't know whether they tore that out.
Yeah,
it was pretty old.
Yeah.
And then in 1948, cars were hard to get, but Bob had a friend who was in the automobile salesman, and we were able to get a 1948 Chevrolet, the first new car in Mill Valley. It was a shape of a teardrop. And I remember I brought it to school. Maybe I shouldn't say this.
No, that's fine.
But it was. We were lucky to get it, and we didn't have a car, and so we got that car. And well, I told about Bob Jenkins and the Kindred's Club, and the tandem.